Okay, welcome to CCNA 1, Module 3. Guess what, people? We've got some news for you. We're up to Module 3, but the other news is that we are now working with GW Micro, and our local lab is going to be running WindowEyes, and we'll be making sure that all of our curriculum and stuff works with WindowEyes. And for you Zoom text users, AI Squared and WindowEyes like each other, so they work well together, just so you know. But we will be looking at working with WindowEyes and making sure our training materials work with WindowEyes. So that's the advertisement for today, and we're very grateful to GW Micro and Chris of SeekTech for allowing this to be possible. So big hats off to them. So, isn't that wonderful?
Big hats off to Chris McMillan for his negotiations.
Absolutely. Alrighty, let's start on Module 3. Sorry, was somebody trying to mark up there?
I was just going to say, more to come, folks. More to come.
That's welcome right. And what to we will be able to CCNA do is, we may be able to get you demonstration copies of WindowEyes, and you can hopefully we'll get on to Module 3 today. Which is quite
does
a long
anybody
time.
Have?
And then, if you feel that you want to purchase that, you can discuss that with GW Micro, who will be more than happy to sell you stuff. But you can get demos and things. We'll make sure that's possible, and you can try it out and see what's hot and what's not. And we'll see how that all develops. Okay. Can anybody tell me, we're in Module 3 now, why Ian's phone's ringing? No, that's because somebody wants his attention. Module 3, can anybody tell me, what is electricity?
The flow of electrons through a path.
And what are these paths usually called? I mean, obviously they're not, you know, leafway or walkway or something.
Conductive materials.
Circuits.
They are generally a circuit. And what is important about a circuit? What is important about a circuit? Can anybody tell me what's important about a circuit? Why is it called a circuit?
Because the electricity or flow of electrons goes around in a circle or a circuit, I guess, in one end and out the other.
It is a closed path. That is the key point I was talking about. It is a closed path. Somebody's transmitting there that I can't hear. I think they've stopped now. No, we still can't hear Rajendra. It's not happening. In fact, it's worse than it was before. I think it'll be time for me to record a sound mixer tutorial this weekend. Okay, it's a closed circuit, and the electrons move around. And can anybody tell me what pushes the electrons around the circuit?
Voltage.
Can anybody tell me the funky name for it?
Force?
Electromotive force.
That's the one, electromotive force. So the voltage is what pushes the electrons around. And can anybody tell me what current is?
The amount
is
a of current
is measured in amperes.
It
the
is measured
of
in
your power.
Yep. It is, and it's the amount of electrons that are moving around in the circuit, in simplistic terms. And what do electrons flow through, generally speaking? What are those things called?
Resistance.
No. What do they flow through?
Conductors.
You, if you put your fingers in the wrong spot.
Yeah, conductors. Conductors is what I'm up to. I want conductors, and electrons flow through conductors. And one of the reasons why electrons flow through conductors is because metals have a loose sea of electrons that are not bound tightly to the atoms, which is why they're metals. And the electromotive force can push those electrons around. Now, one thing I would like to point out here is that electricity is the movement of electrons, but the electrons are all the way through the substance. So when I was a kid, I used to think that when you switched the light on, as soon as you switched the light on, the electron that was sitting at the light switch would run all the way up the wire, incredibly fast, of course, because I couldn't actually see the light go on after you flick the switch. I mean, you just try opening a fridge and before the light goes on. It's not going to happen, okay? This electrical stuff travels really fast. It's lower than the speed of light, but it's actually quite fast. And I used to think that the electron would run all the way up to the light switch, light the light up, and then run all the way back to the switch and back to the power station, okay? It doesn't work like that. What happens is the electromotive force pushes all of the electrons along, and the electrons that are already at the light all move along because they're being shoved, and all the other ones move along behind them and stuff, so that it doesn't actually mean that an electron travels from one end of the circuit to the other. It's like a hose full of water. You don't have to wait for the hose to fill up with water before water comes out the end.
I thought it was just me.
No, I think a lot of people thought that. Okay. And as Corey aptly pointed out, the thing that stops electrons from flowing as well as they would like to is called resistance. Okay, well, no jokes about the Borg, no jokes about resistance is futile. We really can't afford the trademark law. Yeah, we can't afford the lawsuits, okay? But resistance will stop things from flowing in a circuit as well as they would like. And what happens when you get a lot of resistance in a circuit? If you've got a wire that's really high resistance and you are pumping electricity through it?
It heats up.
Can anybody give me a very practical and important application of that that's very important to IT people? For example, in IT people when they're on a break.
The heating elements in the electric kettle to boil your coffee.
That's exactly right. You put a lot of electricity through the heating element warms up, and it warms the water up in your kettle. Well, that's how the heating element works. Okay. Okay, we have two types of electricity. We have direct current and alternating current. Can anybody tell me the difference between direct current and alternating current?
The sine waves look completely different, and when you hook up direct current, you've got to have the positive and negatives clearly marked out. With AC, you can just plug it right in.
Okay. First of all, the sine waves on a DC current isn't a sine wave because it's just a voltage that travels through. The oscilloscope traces look different, yes, but the 1, 2, 7, 5, just getting my brain back into order here, not enough coffee. So for example, if you have alternating current and direct current usually comes from what? What usually generates direct current? Anybody tell me an example of something that generates direct current? Batteries. Batteries generate direct current. What's one of the things that generates alternating current?
A generator.
Station.
Yeah. A generator or a power station, that's right. And just for absolute interest's sake, and this is not in your course, the actual voltage of a power station is generated by moving coils in a magnetic field. So you actually spin coils in a magnetic field, and there are three of them, which are all offset 90 degrees from each other, and you spin those three coils in the magnetic field, and you then get three-phase power, which I'm not talking about, but there's more actual stuff generated from the spinning coils. But has anybody seen one of those little dynamos that you can stick on your bike and you pedal really, really fast and the light goes really bright? And then when you're pedaling really slow because it's dark, the light goes really dim and you can't see where you're going, but you don't have to pay for batteries because you've got the generator on your bike?
Yep.
Okay. Now, how... So if we're talking about
alternating current, like the electrons go one way and then the other way, does that mean they run all the way back to the power station?
No, they all sort of wobble back and forwards, like they'll sort of wobble backwards and forwards in a in the pipe, so to speak.
Okay.
Now, all electrons are the same. It doesn't matter if the electrons flowing through your electric kettle belong to you halfway down the street or whether they're the power station's electrons. There's no difference between the electrons. They're all the same sort of thing. An electron is an electron. Okay, and we know that atoms are one of the smallest units of matter, and atoms have electrons in them. What else do atoms have in them?
Protons and neutrons.
That's exactly right. And the number of protons does what to an atom?
Positively charges it.
Weight.
It gives you its atomic... Well, no, it actually tells you what it is. Okay? Hydrogen, helium, lithium, beryllium, boron, carbon, nitrogen, oxygen. They have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 protons. Got to do a tutorial on that. We can't hear her. Not happening. She's not in chat. She hasn't managed to hit the chat button. Yeah. Okay. So you've got things with different numbers of protons. They're different elements. They're carbon's got how many protons? Anyone tell me? I know we're not doing chemistry here, but can anybody tell me how many protons in carbon?
Four, isn't it?
12. That's all right. You're not necessarily supposed to know that. But there's one in hydrogen, and there's 8 in oxygen. And we're not going to talk about how the shells fill up and all of that shell theory, because that's all quite complicated. Okay, and what else? You've got electrons and protons and neutrons. Can anybody tell me what neutrons do in an atom?
They have a neutral charge.
It is a neutral charge.
Yes, they do, but what's the difference between an element that's got so many neutrons and another element that's got, or the same element that's got a different number of neutrons?
Does it determine its atomic weight?
It definitely modifies its atomic weight, but what it does is it tells you which isotope of the element it is. Which is why you have carbon-12 and carbon-14. There's a different number of neutrons in the atom. Okay, but that's not relevant to the course as such. But I did chemistry at high school, so I do like to go through that. Okay. But it's important to know that atoms have got those things in them, and the more protons in an atom, the heavier it is. Lead's got a lot more protons in it than hydrogen. And hydrogen is very light, and lead is very heavy. There are other things that are heavier than lead, and you can look up your periodic table for those, but gold is one of them, and there's a few other ones that are a lot heavier than lead. So that's all good. And Geraldine's phone is barking. That's all right, you can answer your phone. Okay. There we go. Very sad dogs coming out of Geraldine's phone. Okay. And the reason we talk about atoms is because certain atoms insulate electricity and certain atoms conduct electricity, and the atoms that conduct electricity are actually metals or semiconductors. Now, insulators conduct electric charge and... Sorry, insulators do not conduct electric charge. Insulators do not conduct electric charge. Conductors conduct electric charges. There are special chemicals, basically silicon and germanium, which are what we call semiconductors. And sometimes they conduct and sometimes they insulate, depending on the voltage you're putting through them and depending on how they're set up. And that's how transistors and computers work. And that's why Silicon Valley is called Silicon Valley, because they do lots of things with silicon. But yeah, so lots of silicon used in computers. Anything else? Anybody else tell me what silicon is used in? There's lots of silicon on Earth. What's another thing that has silicon in it?
Cosmetic surgery? I won't say what.
That's not the answer I was looking for. But you may find some people who've had that done to them at this particular place. Where else can you find silicon?
Around the
glass.
Edge of windows?
Yeah, glass. I'd be saying sand. Has anybody come across any sand before? Sand is silicon dioxide. Okay. And I'm just looking through all these notes that don't tell me a lot about that. Okay. And your notes talk about the force dropping off as electrons get further away and being inversely proportional to the square of the separation and all sorts of fun, and you can read through that. The test for Module 3 isn't a lot. But what is important about Module 3 is we talk about different... media types, and we talk about copper, we talk about coaxial cable, we talk about optical fiber, which doesn't conduct electricity because it's made of glass. You send light down optical fiber. And I'll just scroll down here and have a look at what we're going to talk about next. And does anybody have any questions while I'm doing that? Okay, I'm just looking for the next bit of the stuff I actually want to tell you about, because it's all talking about nuclear force holding the atoms together at the moment. Now, one of the other things that's important to mention, and this does come up in your test, if electrostatic charges, like electrons, are loose from their atoms and they build up, this can relate to electrostatic discharge. Does anybody remember electrostatic discharge from ITE? I think we mentioned it a couple of times. It can destroy...
Yes, quite a bit.
And what is the minimum voltage that somebody can feel from an ESD discharge? Is it A, 5 volts, B, 500 volts, C, 3,000 volts, or D, 10,000 volts.
C.
It
is C. That's exactly right.
If okay, they didn't so get that right, they'd have been in strife.
That's right, Joel.
Oh,
they would not have been.
Drop back into IT1 for a bit.
Okay. Now, on Wednesday we showed everybody saw the talking multimeter, and there are labs that you do not actually have to do. You just have to have read them, and in Module 3 that talk about how to use a multimeter, because not everybody has a talking multimeter. And multimeters are used to measure electrical circuits. They are used to measure voltage, current, amperage, capacitance, temperature, continuity, and resistance. Can anybody tell me what resistance is measured in?
Ohms. Yeah, ohms, I think.
Okay, nobody makes silly faces. Ian's got his camera turned on. Oh, good. Yes, it's measured in ohms, and it was named after a bloke called Ohm. O-H-M. Okay, can anybody tell me what Ohm's law is? Nobody knows what Ohm's law is. Gemma, you should know what Ohm's law
is. V equal to IR is the equation for the Ohm's law. When a current of 1 ampere flows through a resistance of 1 ohm, then the voltage produced is 1 volt, is the Ohm's law. Is it correct?
That is essentially correct. Basically, to get the resistance of a circuit, you divide the voltage by the current, and that will give you the resistance. And can anybody tell me what voltage times current gives you?
Voltage?
Yes, it does. This is assuming a DC circuit. AC circuits are different. And the problem is that with AC circuits, you've got other things like impedance to take into consideration and how electrical current behaves in coils and things. So we don't talk about that. Now, it's also worth mentioning that there are a number of ways of creating voltage. One of them is to use solar cells, which will convert light into volts. You can do it with magnetism or electric generators. And you can also create it with friction and static electricity. If you've ever been a science teacher and you managed to get hold of somebody's cat and an ebony rod, you will have made static electricity. The cat doesn't tend to enjoy that too much, so we tend to use Van de Graaff generators, which basically run the brushes across a rubber belt, and you can then get the girl with the longest hair in the class to touch the generator, and then you wave the sphere above her head, and you can make all of her hair stand up on end. Why not? And, of course, what you then do is once all of their hair is standing up on end and you've got them insulated, you then ground them out very quickly. That tends to get quite a squawk, but we won't be doing that. I think it'd be nice to get Geraldine...
I just told him he's not doing that.
That's not fair. I wanted to make all of Geraldine's hair stand up on end. We could take a picture.
We could do it to Topaz.
She doesn't have that much hair to stand up, though.
She's got long hair.
Yeah, good luck with Sue. Maybe we could sort of reverse it or something and make it all sit down.
What? Would you be able to tell if that got done to Sue?
I'd volunteer, but my hair's quite short. Gemma will be able to tell you that.
Okay. Now, one of the things to keep in mind is that resistance is what stops electricity from flowing through a circuit, and this is what causes a signal to drop down and become unintelligible or attenuate, which is why you can only have a maximum of 100 metres long worth of a UTP cable. The signal gets degraded, and also it takes too long for the signal to travel, and it violates all the Ethernet timing standards that we talk about in Chapter 6. Okay. Okay. I'm just looking for the next thing I actually need to tell you here. Okay. Now, the other thing that's probably worth mentioning as far as, because if we wouldn't be considered to be environmentally friendly if we didn't mention it, electrical power from power stations and the use of it is usually measured in watt unit. And there is a kind of a clue there.
Kilowatts?
Kilowatts and kilowatt hours. In other words, an hour's worth. If you draw a kilowatt for an hour, you've used 1 kilowatt hour of worth of electricity, and it will cost you 12.997 cents if you're in Australia. Well, in Perth, anyway.
12.67 in Perth.
Ah, 12.67. Well, we've got a spreadsheet that doesn't have any colours on it, but it lets us calculate what our power bill is going to be. We read the meter every few days, and we put it into the spreadsheet, and it tells us what our power bill's approximately going to be at the end of the month and how much we've used.
That's a great idea, that. All I've left to do is modify it to the Victorian version, I suppose.
Ha, ha, ha. Sue just said that's a really good idea. It saves you from a nasty shock. Ha, 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 ha.
Ah, very good.
A nasty electric shock, in fact. Okay. Okay. Maybe I could just go to sleep. I wonder if anybody had noticed. No, seriously, what else have I got to tell you here?
It's Friday afternoon. No one can blame you for being tired.
Well, that's true. Okay, here we go. That woke me up. Now, an oscilloscope has an x-axis, which is... Let me check that. An x-axis that represents time and a y-axis that represents voltage. So you see this little line going up and down, and it can show you waveforms and things. So oscilloscopes are kind of cool if you can see. Okay, power stations deliver you AC. They don't deliver you DC. Does anybody know why they don't send... DC over power lines, and there's a few reasons. I thought it was actually it doesn't travel efficiently over long distances, and it'll tend to take the copper off your wires and plate it on somewhere else. Yeah, if you run lots of DC through a circuit, it'll actually take all of the material off one electrode and deposited on the other, and that's not very cool. It is. Lots of DC is very dangerous. Not in here.
Well, lots of anything is dangerous, that's why they call it lots of.
Very good, you've been watching Judith Lucy too much.
I don't actually know what that is, so I guess I get credit for that comment.
Ah, we can't hear Mark.
No, I'm here.
Oh, okay, you weren't trying to say something at all then. Your light went on, apparently. Okay, now the other thing we have to keep in mind is cable specifications. And you've got to have a specification of your cable so that you can figure out how much data carrying capacity it is going to have. And there are two specifications for cable. There are the analog specifications, which talk about the voltage and the amperage and the resistance and the impedance and all of that fun stuff. And then you have the digital, which will tell you how many bits per second the cable is going to be able to carry. And a very expensive network cable tester can actually test a cable and tell you how much it's going to carry and how fast stuff is going to go. The different categories of twisted pair cabling, which is a cable that is made up of pairs of wires twisted around each other, and your average twisted pair cable has four pairs of two wires. And the categories, you've got through a Category 3, Category 4, Category 5, Category 6, and there's also Category 5E. The different categories specify what sort of insulation you have, how many twists per meter, and all sorts of fun things like that. And the higher the category, the more the cable can carry. And gigabit needs to be either run on Cat5E or Cat6 cable. Very important that if you're doing a new network installation with twisted pair, you probably want to be doing a Cat6 install or better. The other thing to keep in mind is the length of the cable is important, because if the cable's too long, the signal will attenuate too much and you won't be able to retrieve the signal. Okay. So you've got different Ethernet standards. You've got 10Base5, 10Base2, and 10Base T. 10 is the number of megabits per second, base is for baseband transmission, and the 5 and 2 and stuff refer to the different cable. T is twisted pair, 2 is thin coax, and 5 is thick coax. Okay, coaxial cable. It's basically a cable that is meant to be resistant to interference. On the outside of the cable, it has an insulator. It then has a braid. It then has another insulator, and it has a central core. And the braid is meant to protect the cable from interference. And you can get all different sorts of coax. You will have seen coax connecting perhaps your television to your television aerial. You may have seen it in RF work, like with radios and things. And if you've got a really old network that still uses coax, now would be a time to go and get a new one, unless it's working for you and you've got very specific reasons to run coax. Note, however, that the coax used in televisions is a different impedance to the coax used in networking, and you cannot use 75 ohm coax in your network over long distances. It won't work very well at all. Okay, coax can be run for quite long distances, in fact longer than STP and UTP, but it is a bit expensive to run and it doesn't bend around corners very well. As the thickness of the cable increases, the more difficult it is to bend around corners. I think that goes for people too, but it's certainly true for cable. Okay. Okay, so twisted pair cabling, as I said, has an insulator around the outside of it. Each wire is insulated, and there are 8 wires twisted together in 4 pairs. So the 4 pairs twisted together, and it will show it actually has fairly good signal rejection capabilities. This is to say that the twisting actually sets up a magnetic field around the wire that is meant to protect it from external interference. Now, shielded twisted pair is another sort of cable. It actually has a shielding around those pairs of wires, and it's even more resilient to interference, but it's more expensive to produce, and it doesn't bend as well. And I would say that most of you, unless you're in a specific setup, would probably have a twisted pair cable plugged into your network card on your computer right now, and we'd encourage you not to unplug it or you'll drop off the lecture. But it will be a Category 5 or Category 5E or Category 6 twisted pair cable with RJ45 connectors on either end of it. Okay, I'm just looking for... Okay, I don't really want to get into wave theory at this point. And I don't want to get into the speed at which things travel, so I think I'll leave it there for today. Has anybody got any questions? And we'll finish off the rest of that module next week. Anyone got any questions before we hit stop? Actually, just press... No, because it's going to be too difficult for them to convert the binary in real time. That's all right, I was just mentioning it because I don't think we'll do that as a worksheet. Do you want to hit stop?